The NTSB wants new regs on tire inflation. An Ohio pilot should not even have been driving. And the FAA makes new recommendations on go-arounds. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, April 19th, 2010. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board has followed up its recent probable cause report on a South Carolina Learjet crash with some specific recommendations for the FAA to avoid a recurrence. Underinflation of the aircraft's tires was deemed to be a contributing factor. The board recommends that the FAA provide pilots and maintenance personnel with information that transport category aircraft tires can lose up to 5% pressure per day. It may take only a few days for such tires to reach an underinflation level below what the aircraft maintenance manual specifies for tire replacement, and that the underinflation level that would require tire replacement is not visually detectable. The board also wants requirements for all Part 121, 135, and 91 Subpart K operators to perform tire pressure checks at a specified minimum interval, and also wants tire pressure monitoring systems required for all transport category airplanes. The NTSB has issued a final report on an accident involving an 86-year-old pilot who was offering airplane rides at a Lions Club fly-in breakfast. Six people died, including the pilot. The board says that on the day of the accident, the pilot had been giving passengers rides in his Cessna 206 at an airport he owned in Fremont, Ohio. Knowledgeable witnesses said the pilot was in the habit of hard pull-ups followed by pushovers on takeoff and buttonhole 270s to line up with approaches to landing. The reports and investigation of the crash scene showed evidence consistent with a stall. But more alarming, the pilot had not reported his treatment for macular degeneration, which had been going on for 2 years when he renewed his medical. The deterioration in his eyesight should have been caught by his AME, but that doctor signed him off for a second-class medical noting 20/20 uncorrected vision when it was actually 20/200, and he'd even been warned not to drive a car. That AME has since been decertified. The pilot was in a collision in his car 10 days before the accident flight when he turned in front of an oncoming car he presumably couldn't see. An autopsy on the pilot also revealed severe coronary artery disease, and the NTSB says it couldn't determine whether that played a role. The right front seat passenger was also a licensed pilot, but there was no way to tell whether he had taken the controls of the plane due to an incapacitation incident. The official cause has been listed as the pilot's failure to maintain airplane control for an undetermined reason, which resulted in an inadvertent stall. That's a pretty sterile statement given the other findings. I know I'm going to have a hard time giving up driving when my time comes someday. I just hope I know when to quit flying. In a SAFO, or Safety Alert for Operators, the FAA has recommended that flight crews should be provided with a written policy emphasizing that either pilot may make a go-around call-out and that the response is to be an immediate missed approach. This stems from an incident in 2007 in which an Embraer ERJ-170 overran the end of the runway while landing in snowy conditions. On final approach at 190 feet AGL, the captain, who was the pilot monitoring, stated that he had the approach lights in sight. But at 80 feet AGL, the captain said he couldn't see the end of the runway and stated, "Let's go." The first officer, who was at the controls at the time, insisted he had the end of the runway in sight and continued the approach. Up next on ANN, Top Prop is now available for the Cessna 210. The Pentagon is suddenly against wind farms, and apparently we're getting more comfortable with full body scans. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for April 19th. I'm Paul Plack. Hartzell says it now has an STC that covers new three-bladed propellers installed on Cessna's pressurized P210N and turbocharged T210 FN models. The company claims the installation of the 82-inch diameter Scimitar 3-blade prop on the Cessna 210 series typically offers a 1 to 3-knot increase in cruise speed and a 4% decrease in time to climb to 23,000 feet compared to original equipment. It also reduces noise when compared to similar 3-blade props. MSRP for the kit with a polished spinner is $10,500, and 28-volt de-ice kits are available at additional cost. The new prop is covered by Hartzell's warranty that's good for 3 years or 1,000 hours, and the prop has a 6-year, 2,400-hour TBO. Pentagon officials have moved to block what developers hoped would be the world's largest wind farm because the blades on 2,000 turbines could interfere with a radar system. Caithness Energy was ready to break ground on the 845-megawatt project in north-central Oregon in 2 weeks, but the FAA denied a permit because of Pentagon objections. The Washington Post reports that the negotiations have reached the White House, with senior administration officials lobbying to allow the wind farm to be built. The White House says delaying the project could cost 16,000 jobs in an area that's already economically depressed. They say that the objections could also put 3 other wind projects at risk. The Associated Press reports that Caithness Energy and the developers of the other sites say they had vetted the project with the Air Force several years ago, and they're stumped as to why objections would be raised at the last moment. Turbine manufacturers say they're working on blades made of materials that don't cause radar interference, but the current projects have to be completed by the end of 2012 to be eligible for federal stimulus funding. A delay is also bad news for local ranchers, who had hoped for a financial windfall in lease and royalty payments for allowing wind turbines on their property. Looks like we're buying season tickets to Security Theater. In a semi-annual Unisys Security Index survey conducted in January and February, 93% of Americans said they'd be willing to sacrifice some level of privacy to increase safety when traveling by air. On the specific topic of full body scans, 65% were willing to cooperate. The numbers were even higher abroad. Full body scans were okay with 70% of people in Australia and 90% in the UK. The company suggests that the survey's overall measure of concern over security, which is up from September, partially reflects reaction to the Christmas Day underpants bomber scare. Still ahead, the team that fixed Hubble is honored. A longtime Jeppesen CEO has gone west. And would a minivan door work on the shuttle's cargo bay? You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, April 19th. I'm Paul Platt. The Space Foundation has recognized the team that put together and executed the final manned repair visit to the Hubble Space Telescope in May of 2009. The team won the Foundation's 2010 Space Achievement Award at its 26th Annual National Space Symposium in Colorado Springs. Last year's servicing trip was arguably the most difficult ever, and its success equipped the telescope with systems and instruments that will allow it to continue exploration of the universe well into the next decade. Some of the parts replaced in last year's mission were never designed to be serviced on orbit. The mission was captured on IMAX in a film being shown nationwide. The mission was a cooperative effort of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, the STS-125 crew, Ball Aerospace and Technologies Corp., ATK, Lockheed Martin, and the Space Telescope Science Institute. Aero News has learned that Wayne Rosencrantz, the former president and chief executive officer of Jeppesen, passed away April 12th at the age of 86. Services were held on Friday. He joined Jeppesen following service as an Army Air Corps F-47 pilot during World War II, starting as a compiler of navigation charts and quickly moving into a succession of managerial positions. He served as a manager of airline sales and service, director of production, and senior VP of operations before becoming president and CEO in 1967. That's a position he held until retiring from Jeppesen in 1988. Rosencrantz is credited with leading development of standardized instrument approaches with the U.S. Civil Aeronautics Administration, the predecessor to the FAA, and with overseeing product line expansions which included training materials. Current Jeppesen president and CEO Mark Van Tine observed, quote, "Wayne laid a foundation for Jeppesen's success today. I'm grateful to have had the honor of knowing and learning from him," unquote. Wayne, thank you for your service to our industry and your service to our country. Finally today, the last 12 months have been an embarrassment for Chrysler, starting with bankruptcy forced by the Obama administration last May 1st, a court challenge to a takeover by Fiat, then the takeover itself, followed by full-year 2009 sales, which set a 47-year low. While analysts are mixed on the company's future as part of Fiat, at least there's some good news in the prestige department. NASA has entered into a Space Act agreement with Chrysler to bring technology from the space program to American roads. It's not clear exactly what this means, but it's said to include areas such as mobility systems, advanced materials, and wireless technologies. And it's not an unprecedented partnership. In the 60s, Chrysler built rockets for the Mercury and Apollo programs. So far, much to the relief of astronauts, there's no indication that technology will flow in the other direction. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves tells us how his little local airport got in a scrap over safety improvements. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.